who said to me a few years ago, he said, do you know why there's no companies that exist like yours? And I said, no. And he said, because it's too hard. It's difficult financially, it's difficult managing people, it's difficult coming up with original ideas that an audience wants and hasn't been seen before.
Hello and welcome back to Red Lips and High Kicks with your host, Lydia Holt. I hope you're all having a fine day this mighty Wednesday, and the spring is springing and the hope is high, and I'm back with a new episode. What more could be better? Today I talk to Rose Alice. Rose is a choreographer, a creator, a collaborator, an artistic director of Company International Arts Collective. She is one of the purest artists I think I've ever spoken to. Her soul sings for dance and her passion is so raw and genuine. It shocked me. Rose was born and raised in Australia before moving to Europe after she competed in the Prix de Lausanne at 15 years old. After not finding her place in the conventional way, Rose decided to create her own path and follow her truly creative soul. She has since worked for brands like Rolex, BMW and MTV and created projects all over the world from Asia through to London. She is a force, a real magnetic force, and it was an honour to talk to her today and learn from her story. I think you will love this episode. It made me so happy and filled me with inspiration and motivation and joy, real joy for the dance world. So thank you so much, Rose. Your insight is incredible. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast below and leave a rating and a comment. That'd be amazing. And of course, you can find us on Instagram at redlips.highkicks. Thank you so much for the support. You know it means the world to me. Have a great day and stay excellent. Hello, Rose. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's an honour to have you on the podcast.
Hi, how you doing?
It's great. I love talking to people in London, people all over the world, and especially people like you who have not only worked from, you know, Australia to Hong Kong to London to everywhere. It's great to kind of have such a mix and a different perspective.
It's a bit of a I guess I'm a bit of a child of the world.
No, I love that. And my first questions are, of course, your favourite applause and your most important rejection. Can you tell us about both, please?
So the most important rejection for me actually was, I'm not going to mention the company name, but I got told by a director, this is about seven years ago, I got told by a company director after many months in the studio and then having to still do an audition that I drew too much focus for a job. For a contract.
What a line.
Yeah. And I questioned it and I asked whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. And basically it was a good thing for me as an artist, but it meant that I basically just would never fit in an ensemble. And that for me, I guess, was the most important rejection I've ever received, because it made me, I guess it made me for the first time in a long time really accept the fact that I am incredibly outside the box in the way that I create, the way that I move, the way that I think and everything like that. And instead of trying to constantly put a square peg in a round hole, it was like almost like a freeing moment, I guess, of being like, oh, actually you're barking up the wrong tree. It's time to actually just accept that your difference is what makes you you. So I guess that was my most important rejection. And applause, it's funny that you say the word applause, because I actually don't live for performing. I like the creative process more than the actual stage, but I guess there's two. So there was one particular show that I did in China with Zhang Yimou, who is I'm assuming most listeners don't know who he is. He's like China's version of Steven Spielberg. Nice. So he's a very, very, quite a famous director. And yeah, we did a show where I was the closing of the show, and at the end of my performance, thousands of ping pong balls fell from the ceiling, and it basically looked like the whole ceiling had collapsed. So that the end of that, I remember the adrenaline just being next level crazy. And then, yeah, I guess, you know, my first production that I put on from scratch in London, because that was my heart, my soul, and everything in between. So yeah, two things, but like in very, very different ways.
Yeah, I love that. So contrasting. And I am so excited to talk to you all about that today. And I'm going to just go with how you describe yourself. And on your Instagram bio, you describe yourself as a rogue ballerina. And I love this. I do. I love it. And I think I would probably call myself it as well. And can you tell us what that means to you and kind of what being a rogue ballerina entails?
You know, I actually only changed that a couple of weeks ago because I've had, I've done a couple of interviews for a project that's not released yet. And I've been called that in these Fed interviews, and I kind of liked it. So I thought I'd put it in my bio.
It's great. It's really great. I think it's a whole, it defines a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I guess, like I said before, you know, I'm quite outside the box in the way that I think and the way that I approach art and the way that, and even the way that I move. And I think that I, obviously being like classical ballet background foundation technically, you know, ballet is such a staple part of my life, and I still do ballet class every day to maintain my technique so that I have the freedom to do everything else. But I really do take the foundation and the tradition of that form and kind of mess with it. So I guess that's why the rogue title kind of stuck. And it was actually in this particular interview that with this person who had been watching me rehearse, and he was like, it's weird. He's like, it's kind of like watching ballet, but like on steroids and like in a cave. And then I was like, yeah, that's kind of my vibe. Like, I'm a bit vampire-y. But I do, I guess I am quite, you know, heavy personality, happy personality, heavy soul as well, kind of mixed all together. Is a really strange way to describe myself, but you know, there you go, in a nutshell.
No, it's great, and I think you speak for so many, and I think the space that you hold and the work you create is really unlike many others, I think, if anyone. And I think what's so significant about your work is the way that you've been able to cross paths, and I think it's not done enough, and I think particularly for ballet dancers, it's a really remarkable to be able to change lanes. I think in ballet you're fed one technique, one way to get there, and sort of everything else is deemed a bit of a waste of time. And that kind of crossing the boundary, going to the unknown, can you tell us about that experience and that journey?
I think it's I mean, for me it goes a bit beyond the actual physicality of what we're doing. You know, I think that ballet is, I mean, hard to say this without being too controversial, I guess. However, I think that there is an elitist mentality, and a very old point of view of life, and you know, patriarchy. Like, there's so many things at the foundation of classical ballet, and I think that I, at quite a young age, respected the beauty of what it was, but I felt very creatively dead. I didn't feel like as an artist I was growing. I got to a certain point, and I'm a bit obsessive compulsive when it comes to, you know, technique and training. So I've always loved that militant style of working, and I still do that every day. But creatively, I felt I was being very, very limited by this classical form, this structure that I had to hit and that I had to constantly be doing people's work that have been dead for 50 years, or bodies of work that have been done, you know, for 200 years.
Yeah, to death. And I think literally that, to death.
Yeah, like, yeah, do you know?
And world, yeah.
And again, and I don't mean to say that in a controversial way in any means, because it's not actually that I have any like problem with that. It's just that it wasn't for me. And so when I first started working in Asia, a director that I was working with kind of let me co-choreograph and a part of a show. And I've always kind of choreographed alongside, and I could improvise until the day that I die. Like, I like creating my own stuff. So I got given a platform to do that more. So I guess the more commercial contemporary side of things partnered with the classical technique, I kind of found this new way of using the two to my advantage and to give myself that creative freedom. And then I also realized that actually the physicality that it requires, there aren't many people that can do that. And so that in itself has kind of given me my own little bubble of like, oh, there's like contemporary, then there's ballet, then there's kind of what Rose does. And I like that.
No, and yeah, that's so cool. And I definitely, from kind of, you know, studying you and knowing about you, I definitely would, that's exactly how I would describe you, is you do hold a place which mixes the two. And I think what you said there about the traditional kind of patriarchal old structures that exist in ballet, like they existed because it, you know, it started what in like,
oh, of course, it wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, that's great. You know, it's the same way that we like awe at the inside of churches. Like, there's always going to be that love of the ancient arts. But I think the same way that art has been able to evolve, and, you know, Andy Warhol, you go to the Tate Modern, and that doesn't look like what the inside of churches look like in Italy, but it's still amazing. And I think they're definitely, ballet, it's, yeah, like, I don't want to change it, it's amazing, but I think it is definitely, there are pockets to explore where you can be both. And I think that's what you've done, is you've explored a whole where it's like, no one's doing this, no one's like pushing that boundary. And I think it's amazing when individuals like you do that.
I think it's as well when you're training in classical ballet, in whether that it be in a big institution or in a smaller school, I think that you're almost taught that breaking the mold isn't accepted. Not even directly, it's almost like an indirect kind of slightly oppressive, you need to be a certain way, and whether that be how you look, how you move, how you react to music, how, you know, all of those things. And I think that there aren't many people that I know on the planet that have actually had the courage and the grit to be like, actually, I don't want that. So yeah, I say it's, yes, it is amazing, but I also understand it's not for everyone. To kind of like, you know, branch off from that, you know, I think that a lot of people prefer the structure, not necessarily because they don't want more than that, it's just that risk taking is scary. It's not for everyone, you know?
No, exactly. And like, yeah, you just said, there's, you know, people who can commit themselves wholeheartedly, I also admire and you know, really, really respect. And you said something there about courage, and that's also another question. I'm a massive overthinker. I really kind of have to fight the anxiety of the unknown and fight the fear of what I don't know yet. And I guess being branching out, when there is no one ahead of you, there is not an example or a path, literally. How do you deal with it emotionally to not know what's out there for you?
Sorry, I just was like, oh, emotions. Do you know what? I think that it's almost a cliche thing to say, but I don't really know how else to say it. But, you know, it's that thing of like, you know, oh, but what if I fall? Oh, but what if you fly? And I have fallen more than most, but I've also flown more than most. And I think that you have to almost have the courage to accept that it might not work, and to understand that everything is temporary. So it doesn't matter if it doesn't work, you can try it from another angle. And also, there's always going to be 278 plot twists thrown at you from you know, various directions. And a lot of the time, things that are out of your control. So I guess, you know, the emotional kind of roller coaster that you go through whilst kind of navigating what that is and figuring that out is something that, I mean, for me personally, I very much rely on my handful of humans who are like my limbs, and I would not function without them to keep me grounded. And I think that's I know that I'm very strong, very, very strong person by nature, but I also know that without those people grounding me, things do get too much. So I think having your limbs, and I call them my limbs because, you know, I don't function well without them. You know, without those people keeping me grounded and, you know, telling me how it is and telling me when I've gone too far, and, or, you know, being the one being like, no, you've got this. I just, you know, see it through. Without that, I think it's almost impossible, actually, because you can only absorb so much as an individual. You do need people to bounce ideas off. You need people to like pull you down to earth, because we live in an industry, or we work, live, whatever, in an industry of really big egos and stuff that can be quite intimidating and quite daunting. And if you don't have those people that pull you down to earth, then it does get too much. So, yeah.
And I think, and you're right there, the ego thing, and it's sort of, you sort of have to though. And I think, you know, when you're going it alone, you do just have to trust your gut. You have to judge that every kind of decision you're making along the way is the correct one and is going to be the one that's right. And obviously you never know that, you never know, and you could be wrong. But you do, unlike when you're in a corps de ballet and you like move en masse literally, or you're in a company and you are a body of dancers, you know, being in an individual like yourself, you lose that, and it does become a lot scarier, I imagine. And you have to have so much courage in your convictions, and every little conviction, not even like the big ones, like the little ones, you have to really believe in.
I think as well, perspective is a really key, just jumping off what you just said. I think perspective is a really important thing to kind of mention. And one of my issues with classical ballet in itself and being in that part of the industry when I was quite young, was actually the people around me. Like, I always loved the craft, but I didn't like the types of people I was around. And until I obviously stepped away from that, I didn't realize that it was exactly that. But, you know, you can't have a group of people who have spent eight hours a day, you know, for pretty much their majority of their life staring in a mirror with the same group of people and have them have a really healthy perspective on on how to manage like the little things, and that the small stuff doesn't matter, and you know, those types of things. And that makes a really big difference to your mental state and your ability to take risks, or your ability to feel strong enough in order to, you know, give it a try or to step away from things. I think it's important, if there's anyone who's in a company, in a classical ballet company in particular, that does listen to this, I think it's important for them to remember that there is more than what's inside your bubble. You know, perspective really is key. You have to keep everything in perspective.
Yeah, environments can be so potent and can really cloud your reality, and you're dead on then, especially if you are unhappy. It can be very difficult to actually imagine a world where not everyone is like your environment. And I think it's so crucial to be reminded that we live in a very, very niche world, and not everyone is ballet dancers. People are different and have different interests, needs and demands of others. I also am really excited to talk to you about the fact that you've kind of gone on to business by yourself and you've become your own boss. And again, in the ballet world, it's just not done. And when it is done, it's done very well. And I think, you know, we all have the skills. Everyone is passionate and focused and determined and will work so hard. So, you know, you do make for good businesswomen. But that sort of business mind and having to, I guess, you know, to a point, monetize your own creativity and manage that work-life balance and understanding yourself as a businesswoman, how was that transition for you?
I think, you know, when I very much have learned a lot as I've been going. I think that, you know, I've done a brand change. I've had the pleasure of working with some incredible people. I've also had to learn how to get rid of people. I've had to do a lot of things that I never thought I would have to do. And I think in a normal business, in a normal non-creative business, it's actually, I think, a little bit more straightforward. You know, when you're working with dancers and creatives, everyone is much more vulnerable. They're more open. They are more emotional. They are more erratic. They're more irrational. They're more rational. They're all of these things. And they have to be in order to be an artist. Yeah. However, that does make normal day-to-day tasks and dealing with people really quite difficult sometimes. And I think that for me, over the past 5 years of having the company, I've seen it all. That's all I'm going to say. I've seen it all and I've experienced it all, good, bad, and ugly. And I feel like now, after I had quite a difficult year in 2019 and coming out of that, I have now done a complete restructure of the business. I have a new manager on board. And I feel like moving forward, like our first, we're about to do our first production hopefully in about June, depending on coronavirus, for this year. And I feel completely different about it. You know, I have slightly different people around me, and I have all of these things. But, you know, I know you asked about business, but for me, business within this industry is more about people than business. You know, if you have the right people, then it's easy. And if you have even just one person that's not quite right for whatever reason, it's torture. But, you know, I have there's a quite reputable agent. He's a dear friend of mine in London, who said to me a few years ago, he said, you know why there's no companies that exist like yours? And I said, no. And he said, because it's too hard. He said, you know, it really is. It's difficult financially. It's difficult managing people. It's difficult coming up with original ideas that an audience wants. And I think because of what I do being somewhere between that, the classical, contemporary and commercial world, it's like trying to get people to take you seriously when you know you're producing a product that hasn't been seen before. And, you know, there's so many aspects to this that people don't think of. And actually, to be honest, I didn't really think of either when I started. You think that you have an idea of what boxes you need to tick, but it's like, not that.
you know, that makes a lot of sense. And you're right in having... You want to show people what they've been missing. You want to show them what they haven't seen before. And of course, on paper, they're like, yeah, show me something I never seen. You'd think people will be excited by that. But actually, because they've never even thought about this hybrid that you've created, they'll be like perplexed by it. And it must be incredibly tiresome to convince people of actually the amazing work that you guys do.
Yeah. And I think that what I have to hold on to is that everything that people have seen in person, they speak about for a long time, not because of the physicality of the dance, it's because they've felt something and that stayed with them. And that's always my kind of catalyst of creating. It's like, I want to make someone feel something. So I feel like the more that happens on whatever level, eventually when you have enough people having an emotional reaction to something, it does spread like wildfire. And it's just a matter of time before that picks up its own momentum without it having to be, you know, a name that people know and in a space that people know and that kind of thing. So yeah.
Yeah. And you've sort of touched on it there, and that it does become a lot more about people. And, you know, reading about you and understanding the kind of the work you've done and the brands you've worked for, you truly are the queen of collaborating. I think there's not someone you haven't done for and worked for. And I think what's so amazing there is it really does become actually less about, you know, what you do, but actually it's how you nurture a relationship. How are you professional? How do you keep, you know, because that's something I think you're not taught at school, for starters, and particularly in such a, you know, superficial and literal like art form as ballet, where it's like, what do you just bring to the stage? Like, what do you just bring to the studio? To actually learn about, actually sometimes it's just way more than talent. Actually sometimes it's about who you are. And what have you learned from that experience?
I think the first thing that I would like to touch on is that I think that networking should be obsolete. I think the word in itself is toxic, because there is, it's not coming from a genuine place. And like you said, superficial is such a great word, because it is superficial in its purpose, because it's transactional. I truly believe that you want to build a solid relationship with every single person that you encounter, whether that be the person who is cleaning the theater, or the person who is doing hair and makeup, or the wardrobe girls, or like, you want to build solid relationships, like lifelong friendships, with every single person that you work with, so that when the next project comes up for them, whatever that might be, you're the first person in their mind. And, you know, I think that I'm really proud to say that apart from, you know, a few bits and pieces that get sent my way, like I haven't done an audition or a casting, and actually, you know, that type of thing for a good couple of years, because the people that I'm working with are, you know, the director from one film is then a producer on another and will then hire me on this for that, and or that kind of thing. It's and that has more to do, I think, with, which then touches on your second thing, has more to do with the fact that it is about how you are as a person. I think talent and your ability is secondary. I don't get me wrong, I do believe you need to work hard and be good at what you do. But you know, on my side of things, I would rather work with someone that is maybe slightly less talented, but is a genuine, kind, giving, courageous person, than someone that can do everything, but is horrible to work with any day. Because you know, you can train with someone, you can coach someone, you can rehearse with someone a few extra hours if they're a decent person. If someone's got everything but no one wants to be in the room with them, eventually they're not going to give you the product that you want anyway. And I think that for younger people, it's really important to remember this, because you don't, like, people don't forget things. People don't forget how you react, how you act with people in class. People don't forget how you interact with the crew on set. I mean, I know I don't, and I know that the people, some of the biggest directors and choreographers that I've worked with, I know they don't either. And so that is a really, really powerful thing. You have to build relationships, don't network.
Yeah, that's so good. That I'm definitely going to scroll that really big somewhere so I see it every day. Because it's so true. And I think, again, it's such a selfish art we do. We're all so, like, perfectionists. We're all, like, hungry, so hungry. And I think it is easy to forget that it's also who you are, and you put it so well there. It's the energy you bring to a studio. Like, it's palpable, and it not only, you know, is reflected on the person, your boss, but it's reflected to the rest of the cast, and people notice that. And you don't want to be a drain in a room where you're creating. It should be like a haven. And I think that's such a good point. And I think, you know, there's always going to be someone better than you, isn't there? There's always going to be someone better feet, better look, you know, more experience. There's always going to be someone better than you. And I remember feeling that at school, again, where it's like super competitive and you all like look the same, have the same uniform on. And it is just difficult to feel like you're ever being seen, and thinking to myself, like, I'm never going to be this best girl in this room. I had some incredibly talented friends there. But I could be the hardest working girl. I could be the nicest girl in this room. And like you just said, people don't forget how you make them feel. And I think I'd rather be remembered for, like, oh my God, she was so nice to work with, than like, oh yeah, did you see her feet? So it's...
Yeah, exactly.
You build your legacy that way.
100%.
And when all these collaborations you've done, you know, like I said at the beginning, all over the world, have you got a favorite? Have you got one that you, you know, are still so excited about? That's so good. I'm so glad that there's so many that you can't pick.
I think no, and I can't particularly really name one, because everyone is so different, and every person, it just, every process is different as well. And I think that my relationships, like, I have so much love for so many people. I'm honestly just like, I think before we started recording, like I said, you know, I'm an open book. I'm just like a big ball of love. And I think that I have just such fond memories and love for so many people, but every project has been so different that it's kind of hard to pinpoint one. But I am actually working at the moment on a fashion campaign, which, as I was saying to you before, has been going for almost, well, we're coming up to a year now, and the crew and the team and the designer of this project are like little gifts landed from the skies to me. And I think I had, like I said, I had a quite difficult year in 2019, and then going into a pandemic at the beginning of 2020, yeah. I was handed these incredible people who, for some reason, came into my life at this particular time and have literally kept me going throughout an entire pandemic with creative freedom, with just their generosity, their kindness. And, you know, we're actually working with people from all over the world. We have, you know, people in Latvia, some people in Australia, some here. Like, this is, it's quite a difficult project to have going, considering everyone's in different countries, yeah, and it's a pandemic, but somehow we've managed to make it work so far. So yeah, I guess I, just timing wise, you know, the people on this particular project, I'm very, very, very grateful for. Mm.
And have you got like a favorite role? You know, like you say there, there's you know, a whole team of people that go into what seems like a simple project, and you've kind of done a lot, from choreographing to, you know, to being the dancer, to all these different roles. And now with the International Arts Collective, like, you know, you're really at every entry point here. Have you found a, you know, the place that you like to be in the most?
I guess I like to be, it's not really a role, but like my favorite place to be in a creative process in any way is to just be in a studio, like the the very beginning of a creation with it with musicians, and I enjoy doing the creating the choreography and dancing it myself and composing the music with them collaborative at once. Like that stage and that level for me is when I feel like I'm at my best, and it's also when I'm my soul feels just like it's so full and my heart is going to explode because the electricity and the chemistry that I have with the musicians that I work with and what we can create by, you know, starting off with just improvising with a specific tempo in mind or a specific idea in mind, and then what comes out of that is quite remarkable. So I actually enjoy that part more than when I'm in a studio with lots of people.
Yeah.
You speak, I love hearing you talk. You sound, you know, you're such a raw artist, and like the way you're describing that, I can really feel the emotion and understand your passion. It's really, really inspiring. It's so interesting to hear from you. What I think is super cool as well is, like you've just said, you work with musicians and stuff, but you've also done so much work with tech, and like in, you know, some of the work you've done over in China sounds amazing. And I think in something that, you know, I've never seen before. And I think it's also such a cool way to, you know, make ballet and dance like cool and interesting. I mean, tech is just, you know, like literally the rocket going to like the moon and the Mars right now. Like you can't keep up with the new inventions, the new apps, the new algorithms. And to kind of combine dance into it is so amazing. Can you tell us about that?
So, I mean, I've done a couple of things. I did a project for the V&A Museum here in London with robots. And I worked with the engineers and we choreographed the robots with the engineers up in Manchester and then like brought them to the V&A Museum and we actually danced with them, which was part of the London Design Festival, which was really cool because the whole, I guess, process of that was trying to show to an audience that robots aren't a scary thing. They can actually be collaborative with us and we can live and work alongside them. They can enhance our life. They're not going to take our jobs. Because I think that there's a lot of weird like groups around the planet that are like, robots are going to take over the world. and actually that's not really the case from what I've experienced anyway. And then in China, the show with Zhang Yimou was quite next level crazy, if I'm honest. There was robots on that show as well. There was also holograms. There was the piece that I did was with kinetic lights. So there was 600 kinetic lights. Actually, they're in Berlin, the guys, cool. The guys that do the kinetic lights. Yeah, they're called White Void. And they are the creators of the kinetic lights. So basically these lights were, it's like 600 lights in the ceiling and they are all programmed to actually be choreographed. So the lights do their own thing basically, and I would dance with them, and so the whole point of Zhang Yimou's show was actually to show tradition and technology and how they work, how it works alongside each other, but also is technology taking over. So this conversation about technology and art has been going for a really long time, and I think in the past kind of few years it's becoming more and more prominent because obviously technology is starting to get next level crazy, but yeah, I do find it it's quite a remarkable process, but I give me just a pianist and me in a studio any day. there's also an element of it that just takes so much time and resources and computers and everything, and you know, like as much as I feel so grateful to be part of these productions and I loved every second, there's also an element of it that I'm just kind of like, oh yeah, I'd happily just be in a room with a musician.
It's so easily pleased, isn't it? Like again, I'm just saying, you're that raw artist, like the origins of why you love it are so pure and simple. Yeah. But actually, yeah, this is all like icing on top of the cake, but actually what feeds us is sometimes the most simplest thing.
Yeah, it's the simple stuff.
And like just hearing, you know, the last how long we've been talking, it's amazing the career you've had, and I guess the creation, the corners you've reached and the way you've explored your own potential. I mean, I probably know the answer, but is this the career you thought you'd have?
Yeah, I mean I left home very, very young, and much to my parents' demise, they were like the most non-dance parents ever. I didn't really give them a choice. And it's literally, it sounds really dark and whatever, but I truly believe that creating and doing what I do is my purpose in life, and I would rather not be here than not have it. It's not a job for me, and it hasn't been since I was, 12. It's more than that. And I think that I have to also, but I guess the difficult part about that is, it is quite a lonely place because there aren't many people who have the same, there's many people that obviously do the craft that I do, but there's only a kind of a handful of people that I've encountered in my lifetime, and majority of them aren't in London, that actually have the same relationship with their work and art as I do. And so I remember being quite young and my mom saying to me, it's lonely at the top. It's lonely at the top. And I used to always think she meant like fame, and I'd be like, oh, whatever, like that's not the point. And she didn't mean that. She meant like the deeper I go into why I do this and the actual physicality of it and the emotion that's and vulnerability and strength that it takes and the resilience and the grit and all of these things. It does, like people do fall away over time, and that's not a bad thing. It just means that you're left with a handful of really really courageous and really really talented people who just they breathe it, and I feel like we have quite a few mutual friends just from what I've seen on the gram, and I feel like anyone that you speak to will be like, yeah, she's like a walking ball of like, I just must dance 24/7. So it's not, I don't even believe that it was a choice of a career for me. I think this is kind of a bit of a, it's something more. I'm not religious or anything like that, but it's definitely, it's something more than just making a choice for a job. And yeah. I haven't quite ever put a word on that, but
no, it's that the best way to describe. Higher calling, isn't it? Just belonging to a place that's that you're yet to explore, and that always kind of going that direction.
Yeah, like my best friends will call me alien, and I, love it dearly. But it's also, I think, because of exactly that. It's like it's not. It is something that's kind of not really human. The pull that I have for it isn't really human. It can be a torturous and wonderful place in my brain.
No, but I love that. And again, you on International Arts Collective on their website, you say, it's this place for those who don't fit in. And what would be your advice for people, especially young ballet dancers? Again, I think what we've said, ballet, it can be harder to break from those rules in ballet. I think it's not those kind of, can be quite, the little blinkers can be quite opaque. You can't really see through them. What would be your advice to people who maybe are struggling to fit in and want to explore that creativity, but maybe don't know how?
Don't wait for permission to be creative. You don't have to be given creative license to create, especially if you're in a ballet school, you have access to a studio, use it, outside of, and it's not about training technique. If you want to explore yourself choreographically, if you're finding yourself feeling stale, you don't need a license to create. That's the beauty of art and creation. So use whatever resources you have at your disposal to actually kind of explore your artistry and explore you, and you might be pleasantly surprised that something will happen, or it might not, and that will also put you into another direction. The other thing, which I think is like a really key thing, and I have said this before in a podcast with someone else a while ago, for younger dancers, it's okay to have a voice. You're allowed to ask questions. You're allowed to speak up if you're feeling not fulfilled or you're not feeling right for whatever reason. Your superiors shouldn't penalize you for that. There's a difference between being disrespectful and having a voice, and I think that line is really blurred, to the point where I don't know about you, but like when I was at school, it's like you didn't speak.
No.
Like I think that there is a lack of discipline and respect that goes along with saying to a bunch of kids, just say what you want, which also you don't want. But I think that you have to, you can find a line of, knowing how to be really respectful to your teachers and to your mentors and still speak your truth and speak up if something doesn't feel right. Or if something isn't isn't for you, you know, like if you get to, there's a couple of girls that I've coached, you know, and two of them in particular, like one of them we were rehearsing for the Prix de Lausanne. This was a couple of years ago. And it was like, I think 3 weeks before like sending her video, and I walked into the studio and I just went, do you really want to dance? And she just burst into tears and went, no. And I was like, okay. And, you know, then that conversation, you know, was obviously quite an emotional couple of weeks, and then conversations with her family and all that kind of stuff. But then she went on to, a year later, go to, you know, full scholarship to design school. And then she was, intern for like Alexander McQueen. Like, you know, it's sometimes you have to just feel calm. Yeah, do you know, and that for me is like, as a teacher, I don't really call myself a teacher necessarily, I teach, but like that is one of my greatest achievements, because, you know, that put someone who felt trapped onto the right path, and like those types of things. So it's okay to have a voice, you can speak up, and not be, you should be able to speak up and not be penalized for it.
No, and God, you speak so much sense and so much wisdom and understanding in it. I think it will help so many people. But did you ever have those figures in your life, or did you kind of have to find that strength on your own?
No, I did not. And actually, that's one of the things that I say to the couple of girls that I've been mentoring for many years, that like my only goal is to be who I needed when I was their age. And now I guess I'm kind of, they're like my little sisters, and they're, you know, between 19 and 21 now. But no, I didn't have that. And I think that if I did have that, or I had someone who was, you know, a mental figure that had no ulterior motive, I think that my journey, I hate that word, but you know, my thing into whatever would have been just a little less turbulent, and it would have been a little less scary. So yeah, I think having a mentor is with someone that you trust and feel comfortable with, is really important, especially if you're unsure as to where you really see yourself fitting.
Yeah. Oh, this has been amazing. Thank you so much, Rose. Honestly,
yeah, my pleasure, lovely.
This will go such a long way. I think there's a lot of people who need to hear these words. So thank you so much.
No, absolute pleasure.